Well, welcome to Living Water this morning. I invite you to turn in your scriptures to Genesis chapter 6. Now, I have to admit and confess that I had not read the Sunday school lesson until this morning, and I didn't realize the passages that our Sunday school lesson chose, but we don't normally think of the Revelation passage as a Christmas passage. And I appreciate the comments that Dave made this morning in his comments about focusing on God's love. And so that's in essence what I had chosen to do this morning. And the message is focus on God's love. Last Sunday, you remember that Trevor had a Christmas message where he focused on the response of various people to the birth of Jesus. And so today I want to look at the birth itself. Why was the birth of Jesus necessary? And so turn with me to Genesis 6, which also is not normally a Christmas passage. But I'd like to gather from Genesis chapter 6, why was the birth necessary? Why did Jesus even need to leave the Godhead and come to earth as a baby? And so, beginning at verse 5, Genesis 6, verse 5, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made him. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Now, I want to look at verse 6 first. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on earth. And it tells us it grieved him. It was more than just, you know, I made a mistake. How do I correct this? But it grieved him to his very heart. And I want you to note those words this morning, the Lord was grieved. The Lord was sorry. Use both of those terms. Now, what is it that would bring that kind of grief to the heart of God? Those words imply something that was very personal. It was some kind of personal affront between man and God here. It was some kind of personal offense, a betrayal of God. And what offense, what betrayal, what personal thing could be that significant that it would literally bring tears to the heart of God? Now, backing up to verse 5, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Now, could the writer have gotten more graphic than that in his terminology? You know, he could have written this verse something like this. God saw that the wickedness of man was in the earth, and that his intentions of the thoughts of his heart was evil. And you would have a whole different context than you do with those four very descriptive words that are in that passage. God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. So those are four key words that describe to us the extent of how bad it was. All over the inhabited earth were people, and they were constantly doing evil things in the sight of God. every intention of the thought of the heart of people was only evil continually. And as I was studying this, I had to wonder, could there be a sadder passage of Scripture? Think about this. You can't really understand the great horror of these words in verse 5. You can't understand the tragedy or the sad thing that brings such grief to the heart of God if you don't first understand those words relationally. So what is happening here? It's describing something that's deeply personal. If we don't understand what's being described here, you can't understand the glory of this baby birth that happened. So let me explain. Human beings were created or hardwired to love God. That's what we were created for, is to love God. And that love of God, or that Godward way of living, that God consciousness, could you say, was to be the thing that would shape every one of our thoughts, our motive, our choice, every decision, every word, every action of every human. That was the intent. And so you should be able to ask me at any given time in my life why I'm doing what I'm doing. You know, I should be able to walk up to you or you to me. Why are you doing what you're doing? And with every answer, we should be able to say, God. It's all about God. And yet, how many of us really stop and think about that? We would constantly recognize God's existence. Do we daily recognize God's existence? Do we recognize His authority in my life? Do I recognize His greatness? Daily. Every moment. Every situation. And as an act of deep personal love, from recognizing that, I would choose then to serve Him with all of my time and all of my energy. That is what we were created for. We were made for God. We were made to love God above everything else. And let me clarify here. I'm not talking about Christians here, or just Christians. This is all humanity was created for that purpose. All of us are lovers. We were wired to love. Everything we will ever do is driven and motivated by love. And the love that was to motivate us was God-directed love. And that's how we were meant to live. It's important to understand that obedience is rooted in the love of God. And because I love God, who is in essence the lawgiver, right? Then I will find joy in staying inside of His boundaries. I'll find joy in what He calls me to do. I'll find joy in serving Him. I'll find joy in pointing to His glory because I love Him. And that is true in any relationship we have. When we love someone, you want to serve them. You want to please them. You want to find joy in their joy. And that's how every human being who was ever given life and breath was meant to live. That was the plan by God in the beginning. But now it's clear in Genesis 6, verse 5, something has happened because there must be some other love. Some love that has claimed the heart of human beings. Because no longer do they delight in serving God. No longer do they find joy in His joy. No longer do they want to stay inside of His boundaries. But they willingly, sometimes even purposefully, and continually do what is evil in His eyes. What would bring distress to him and be worse than that. Think about Christ's summary of the law when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest command? And Jesus summarized the law and he began with this. He said, well, you shall love the Lord your God, how? With all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind, then love your neighbor as yourself. So that's the command of all commands. The root command is love God. And it's this love for God that initiates obedience to all the other commands. And if love for God is the greatest command, then wouldn't you agree with me that the greatest evil is failure to love God by not obeying him? When we don't love God, I would think that it's difficult, if not impossible, to stay inside of his boundaries in full obedience. We need to understand, however, if humans no longer love God as they should, it doesn't mean that they don't love. Because we will always love something or someone. We're hardwired to be lovers. And so if we're not loving God, we're giving our love to someone else. And many times, it's ourselves. No one is loveless. God has your love at the deepest level, or something else does. And so when we read about this evil and this wickedness that brought grief to the very heart of God, we should then ask the question, what love is so seductive and so powerful that it has the capacity to replace the love that was meant for God? What has happened? What has replaced that? And I think we find the answer in Paul's writing in 2 Corinthians 5:15, where he said, Jesus came, referring to that baby that was born, so that those who live would no longer live for themselves. And yet the thing that always replaces love for God, the thing that leads us to this endless list of evil, is really love of self. Somehow we insert ourselves into the center of this world. We're obsessed with our will and our way. We want to be in charge of our own lives. We want to set our own rules. And we become obsessed with our own comfort, our own pleasure, our own happiness. Whatever we want is what's important. And when we live for ourselves, we will step over God's boundaries again and again. Just happens. We will. Because our heart is not motivated by love for him. Now, think about this. What is it that makes parenting hard for you? Want me to tell you? You've given birth to self-worshippers. Your children are, by nature, self-worshippers. They want to write their own law. They want to set their own rules. Do you expect to ever have any of your children come up to you and say, Dad, give me more rules? You know, if you could just exercise more authority in my life, I would just feel so good and so secure. Lay it on. Bring it on. It's not the nature of our children. They're self-worshippers. And we have to counter that. Something else to think about. Every act of murder and violence is rooted in self-love. Every moment of greed is rooted in self-love. Every bit of disobedience to parents is rooted in self-love. The child loves himself more than he loves you. And that's how it is between us and God, if we have a misplaced love. The evil of the world has happened because we no longer love God as we should. And it's a tragedy, because the world was designed to have it at its very center, love of God. And when that's not there, you have things that aren't going to work out. You have chaos and evil. And we see that every day. Read the news. What a tragedy. God didn't design it that way. Human life was meant to be a beautiful love relationship between God and man. That's what God wanted. That's what God designed. But when you read this passage and just let your mind go a little bit, you can see tears in the eyes of God. You can hear weeping from the voice of God. God is grieved, deeply grieved, because not only has that love been taken from him, but it's been stolen from us. It's the ultimate of human betrayals. So what's God going to do? How is God going to respond to this ultimate betrayal? You see, God understands that every sin is vertical. You have never sinned a sin that was purely horizontal. It always goes vertical between us and God. So every sin we commit is forgetting him. Every sin is refusing to love him. Every sin is a rejection of his presence, his glory, his authority. Every sin is vertical. And I think that's why David was able to say, in confessing his sin there with Bathsheba, murder and adultery was involved. He said, against you, you only have I sinned and done this great wickedness. Now, what David is saying is, my failure wasn't first that I didn't love Bathsheba and Uriah as I should. But God, my failure was, I didn't love you as I should. And when I didn't love you as I should, I was able to do these horrendous things. This is against you, God. And so what's God's solution to all of this? I've given you a description of our humanity, our sinfulness, our rottenness. What's God's solution? Does he have a solution? Well, let's read 7 again, verse 7. The Lord said, I'm going to destroy man that I've created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing, the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made him. It's a horrible end to a story, right? Is it the end? You know, we look at that verse and we say, God in holy righteous justice says, I've had enough. I made you. I own you. I provided every good thing you could ever need. You have a life of beauty, or you could have, that you could never have made for yourself. I did all that for you. And this is what I get? This is what you do? I'm going to wipe you out. I'm going to clean up the earth again. And you know what? God has every right to do that. It's not unrighteous anger that makes him do it, but it's a holy and righteous justice that sends the waters of the flood to wipe out or to wipe the earth clean again. It would seem like this is the end of the story. It's over between man and God. But there's verse 8. Noah, one man among thousands, one man found grace in the eyes of God. And by a simple act of grace, God places his favor on Noah and his family. And he starts over. Now, it's important to note what happens after the floods recede, the waters recede. The earth dries up. And God makes a covenant with Noah. And God says, Noah, I'm going to bless you. And not only am I going to bless you, but I'm going to bless your descendants. Now note that, your descendants. And if you read through the genealogy, you're going to read a lot of names that you forgot were there. But you come to the one name, Abraham. God made a covenant with Abraham, and he told Abraham, not only will your descendants be blessed. See, that's what he told Noah, your descendants. But now he's telling Abraham, not only are your descendants going to be blessed, but through your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Everyone. Who was that seed? Jesus Christ, the baby. The one we celebrate this week. And the Apostle Paul alerts us to the fact that the seed of Abraham is in fact Jesus Christ. The only way this horrible brokenness of relationship could be corrected is for God to send his Son. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth. Now listen to the next comment that he makes in this verse. And every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Of his heart. You know, if we have just a behavior problem, we should be able to correct that ourselves, right? Our problem is deeper than a behavior problem. Our problem is a heart problem. It's a heart problem. In the Bible, the heart is portrayed as the control center of the human being. The heart is the directional system of the human being. Whatever controls my heart is going to control my words, my behavior, and everything else. And so the one thing we cannot do is escape our heart. So we need to be rescued. Someone needs to do for me what I'm not going to be able to do myself if I'm ever going to love God in the way he was meant to be loved. We need rescue. Every one of us needs rescue. So God sends his Son as a baby. And he sends him to be exposed to all the harsh realities of life in this fallen world. You know, for Jesus to live in the middle of all that brokenness and all that temptation in utter perfection, which he did, it had to flow out of a love for God, his love for the Father. And it was him that said, I came to do your will, O Father. That's why I'm here. He recognized that. And so in every thought, in every desire, in every word and action, he perfectly obeyed. He did what we are never going to be able to do in and of ourselves. And he died a satisfactory death. He took our sin upon himself. He paid the penalty for our sin with his death so that we again can have hope. You know, this passage could have stopped with verse 7, but it didn't. The hope for us is that finally love of self can be defeated and it would be replaced by the love of and for God. Every cell of our hearts needs to fully love him so that every word, every thought, and every action would please him. That's the hope of redemption. And it all started with God sending baby Jesus. And by his work on the cross, the power of sin has been broken. Jesus made a public spectacle of the enemy, Satan, by triumphing over Satan there on the cross. And in our lesson today, you can even take it all the way to the manger. God came to the rescue and saved the baby that the dragon was determined to kill. So we don't have to live under the slavery of sin any longer. Every one of us can celebrate in the hope that is represented by this baby in a manger who came on this mission of rescue and deliverance. That was Jesus' purpose. And because he came, every cell of our hearts can be controlled by love of God. And that love is going to cause us to live inside of God's boundaries because we love him and will live for his glory forever and ever. So my challenge to you this morning is, as we celebrate this Christmas season, think about what you've been saved from. Think about the fact that we are carnal. We will not make it on our own. Jesus came to give us hope. Came as a baby. God's love that Dave was sharing about this morning just goes through all of Scripture. And we have it because he loved us. And what do we give back? Love of self, if we don't let the work of Christ change our hearts. So that's my prayer for us this Christmas season, is that we would truly reflect on what the purpose was for Jesus' birth as a baby. Aaron, come and lead us in a closing song.